She Did It Her Way podcast, episode 184, all about turning your passion into a paycheck with Ashlyn Carter.
Welcome to the She Did It Her Way podcast, a collective of interviews with top female entrepreneurs from around the globe who have done it their way. These women are disruptors, savvy, courageous, confident, innovative, decisive, unconventional, and humble. Our ladies have proven business models, have taken risks, and have failed only for success to follow. Join us as they share their stories, behaviors, habits, mindset, thought processes, and what it is like to be a woman who means business. And now, here's your host, Amanda Bolin.
Hey friends, welcome back for another episode of the She Did It Her Way podcast. I'm super excited for you guys to be tuning into this episode. Today's guest is probably one of the most authentic, genuine, kind-hearted individuals that I have met most recently, and I'm so excited that she came on the show and that we got to chat about her journey in entrepreneurship because she is extremely raw and vulnerable with her entire journey. And we talk about how the adrenaline rush of hustling can be insatiable and the payoff even more satisfying, and really questioning though how much longer can one go for and feed off of this adrenaline rush and the payoff being so satisfying. And so when do we know when to take a step back? So today's guest, Ashlyn Carter, who is the founder of Ashlyn Writes, became very familiar with the adrenaline rush of hustle, which some of us listening might actually know the adrenaline rush that we get when it pays off and how we can go after the next thing and the next thing. And we talk about Ashlyn and her previous career in corporate PR and her type A personality that always pushed her towards perfection. But when the stress from her job as a publicist coupled with planning a wedding led to her developing an eating disorder that she knew she had at that point in time that she had to make a career change. And so she became inspired by Laura Casey's book, Make It Happen, during her recovery time, and was introduced to this online world of creative female entrepreneurs, and already in love with working with female dominated work environments due to her time as a traveling leadership consultant for a sorority, ADP. She knew she wanted to be surrounded with that positivity again. So we walk through that journey and we talk about how she started working with some really influential kick butt businesswoman names in the industry to write copy for whether it's launch copy or website copy. We also talk about finding the value in whittling down your target audience and why it's important to do so. We also talk about know when to take a break from hustling so you can rest, because there's a tremendous amount of value in resting. Also, figure out a way to get face-to-face with experienced entrepreneurs in your market who can help launch your business. So there's just, again, like I always say this in every episode, there's always so much more than what I'm going to say in the intro. All I got to say is you guys got to listen to this episode with Ashlyn Carter.
That is, I love it. Well, Ashlyn Carter is a copywriter for creatives and is it calligraphist? No, that's not even a right word, but you do
calligraphy. You know, but I like it. It's catchy. Calligrapher is typically the term.
Oh my gosh. See, I can't even, my brain is like all over the place this morning. Oh my goodness. All right. Well, that was an interesting start. Let's just dive in. Ashlyn, I'm going to let you share what is it that you do now? And then let's talk about your journey and how you got to where you are, and you're working with like all these wonderful creatives doing copywriting. Yeah, take it away.
All right. So as my business looks now, my business is called Ashlyn Writes because yes, it is twofold as far as writing goes. Half of it is calligraphy services for brides, and then the other half, which I'll dive into more. It doesn't exactly shake out to half as far as the financials go. But copywriting, and that is something that I didn't really see coming, which again I'll get into. But essentially, and I've got a tiny but mighty team, and we provide copywriting services for creative entrepreneurs, predominantly in the wedding space, that serve a lot of female entrepreneurs, providing website copy and then launch funnel sequence mapping and sales page copy for different launches that they have going on in their business. So that is the bread and the butter of what we do. I'm based in Atlanta, Georgia, hence the accent. And absolutely love my job.
Oh, yeah. And you've got, like, I'm so excited to dive into from the copywriting standpoint and the do's and the don'ts. And your clients are amazing, like Laura Casey, Jenna Kutcher, Heather Crabtree, Dean Street Society, Rising Tide, Delta, like all, and Scarlet and Gold, an amazing list of people that you've worked with. Why don't you take us back to what you were doing before you got to where you are today?
Okay. So, as far as the story goes back, I, in calligraphy, I picked that, like, I just always was doodling when I was a little girl, but not drawings as much as words. And so, I also chronologically sorted magazines under my bed in high school so much that my dad was like, I'm pretty sure this, like, this is threatening the kitchen that's underneath your bedroom. But I just loved magazines, loved them. And it turns out that makes you, cut out to be probably a good journalism major. And so that is, I went straight into college knowing that that's what I wanted to do. I wanted to study journalism. And, I went to Samford University in Birmingham, Alabama. And after that year, I was pretty involved in my sorority at different levels of leadership. And so I traveled as a traveling leadership consultant for Alpha Delta Pi sorority, which I'm sure there may be some Panhellenic women listening in. And if you ever had nationals come to your chapter, that was me. But it was the best job I'll never do again. It was so hard. I went to 29 American universities. We were 28 days on the road, 2 days off. And just, I think that was the point.
Wait, what?
It was crazy. Like, I lived out of 2 suitcases, 1 carry-on, like, same outfits for, I mean, we came back in for training, and we had obviously like Christmas off, but it was grueling. And it was, just a lot of work at the university level. Just, that was when my heart first got pricked to work with women. I just fell in love with, the way women's minds work, the way they're marketed to, just fascinated with it and loved kind of being a mentor to these younger women as well. So loved that job, knew though that I wanted to be in Atlanta and I wanted to work in public relations. To take it back just a little bit, again, in college, I, you remember when, it's funny now to think, like, it's been about 10 years since the blogging boom, but I remember having a blog, like, when it wasn't cool. And I started it because I was interning at Southern Living Magazine and my editor, I read a story one time. He's like, cool, now go put it on your blog. Put it on Twitter was new, you know, just like
And
yeah. And that was 2009. So there was a magazine that closed, unfolded on the floor above us and another magazine shuttered in a floor in another building. And so I went back that year and I was like, I'm not, like, print is a no-go for me. I'm too terrified. Take me to the public relations side. And so fast forward again, I knew I wanted to be in PR here in Atlanta. And so found my dream agency, 100% adored it. It was in Midtown Atlanta. And when you're in Atlanta, the big accounts include brands like Delta Airlines, Chick-fil-A, Orkin Pest Control, Home Depot. Those are the brands that are around. So I was primarily on the Delta account, writing email marketing copy, hosting Sky Miles members events, planning those, doing just a lot of marketing touch points. I absolutely loved it. Actually, my life has come full circle because went from the traveling job where I was, you know, an airline warrior to working there. And then I married into a Delta family. My husband works for Delta now, so we're big Kool-Aid drinkers. And he came with flight benefits, which gave him points for sure. Yeah. So about this time, there was a kind of a celebrity chef here in town that we'd also done Delta events with. And he reached out needing a publicist. I told him no, actually twice. I just loved my job so much, but I had missed, I lived in a townhouse with a bunch of girls and I'd missed the second roommate's birthday. And so I was like, you know what? Like, maybe I do work a lot. Maybe there is something that could be adjusted. And so, when he asked me the second time, I said, you know, I'd be willing to move if, hey, I made a little bit more money. Good old communications jobs don't exactly put a ton of money in the bank. And then I also told him that I just needed a little more rest because I was go, go, go 24/7. And so I moved companies. But unfortunately, they were just growing at a rate and kind of it just wasn't the best environment for somebody who worked in PR. I was kind of expected to have my cell phone under my pillow at night and just be on, you know, never, ever take a day off. And that just didn't, just to be honest, I mean, I had struggled with depression and anxiety, just being a really high-strung perfectionist kind of person. And that was just kind of a recipe for disaster. And about this time, my husband proposed, and it was kind of that one more thing, like in talking to you about wedding planning, it is a lot on your plate. And that on top of everything else was kind of the straw that broke the camel's back. And to be honest, my way of like dealing with that, which I didn't see coming at all, was by measuring what went into my body and what went out. And before I knew it, like literally before my eyes, before I knew it, I had developed an eating disorder and generalized anxiety. And so, you know, we're going through this about, it was about like 6 months where it got really bad. And, you know, I'm just hanging on by a thread at work, like just trying to be so perfect at work. Like I knew I had this glamorous job. I didn't want to let anybody down. I'm trying to plan the wedding. And so I got through it. And that was kind of the point my mother-in-law looked at me one day and she said, you know, what's more important to you, your relationship with your job, which you seem to adore, or your relationship with my son? And that was like a good gut. It was hard to hear, but it was the gut check I needed. And so she actually helped me put in for FMLA and take medical leave of absence from work to go into partial hospitalization, just to get some help. Like I was really sick and needed a lot of help. So it was kind of during that time, this like forced rest period, where I kind of got to reassess my obsession with working and going 24/7. And about this time, I was introduced to Laura Casey's book, Make It Happen, realized there was this whole like ecosystem of creative entrepreneurs and women and online businesses. And it's like when your eyes open, like the first time you realize that's a thing, you're like, wait, what?
Yeah, you're like, this has been here the whole time.
Yes. How did I miss it? And so, I think like the seeds were planted. I was like, you know what? Like here I am. I do my moonlight job doing envelopes really just to have something to do. It was like I typed all day and I wrote all day on a computer and I just wanted a creative outlet. So I'd always loved doing that. And I thought, you know, maybe I can figure out something. So these seeds were planted and Wes and I thought about it and prayed about it a lot and thought, you know, one day, 6 months from now, maybe I'll move into this. But I went back to work and about 2 months later, I complained one too many times and he was like, yep, you're done. And so I have one more quick little story. He took me to one day I came in from work and he was like, so we're going to go buy you a book. And I was like, jackpot. Like I've married a guy who thinks the bookstore is a great date. Side note, he hates to read. Like this was me being like all in my head. Like this was not what he was thinking. We ended up going to Best Buy. He was so sweet and, bought a laptop. And that was kind of his way of telling me, like, I believe you, I believe you can do this. And, after that I put him a 2 weeks notice and the next 2 weeks later I was sitting in our spare bedroom trying to figure out how to launch this thing. So that's kind of my journey from, corporate land to creative land. And, I still look at my corporate years like an agency and smile. I think it is a really good thing and it teaches you a whole lot.
Yeah. Well, so talk to us then. So how long you've been doing calligraphy and the copywriting for how many years at this point?
I started February 2016 is when I went full time. So that, about a year and a half now. Calligraphy I've been doing that 4 years professionally now. But again, like moonlight, taking money under the table, like didn't have a client system, just like just going for it with that. Professionally a year and a half.
That is amazing. So then share with us like the journey of the early stages. If you can take us back to that moment when you were full time, 100% doing Ashlyn Writes.
Oh my gosh. That first day in the office, I was like, not prepared for, you know, I sat there and I was like, okay, what are my core values going to be? Like, let's take it way back to the basics. And I think I just started doing all the things. Like if it was a writing project, buddy, I was your girl for it. I still did some content marketing work for different corporations around Atlanta. I did ghostwriting for blogs for different people. I did editorial write, like just too much writing. And editorial pieces. And then calligraphy, if they wanted chalkboard signs, if they wanted other kind of signage, if they wanted escort cards, if they wanted envelopes, if they wanted full invitations, like just not specialized, like jack of all trades, master of none was like where I was going with this. And it got obviously, as you can imagine, a little bit crazy as far as just too much. And I realized that the more and more that I did this, that I really liked working with the creative entrepreneurial sect of women and serving them with website copy, because I understood what it was like to market to brides and to run this like small business concept. So I went to my first creative retreat and I remember like terrified to pay this amount amount of money for a retreat, but we knew that the work was coming in, and so it seemed like a good investment, and it totally was. I went to Bonnie Bakhtiari's Loom Retreat, and that's in Austin, and it was at that where so many good things begin over jalapeno margaritas.
Yum.
Yes, so good. I got to know and met Jenna Kutcher, and I remember just being so, you know, intimidated by her because she was just this big brand in the space that I was aiming to work in. And Jenna just, and I told somebody the other day, like, I want to be what she was for me because she saw this girl in her past, what she'd done, and she had the foresight to see how that could apply to something else. And I think, do you know who Paul Jarvis is?
That sounds really familiar.
He writes these great Sunday dispatches for his email list. But the other day, his was focused on how a lot of entrepreneurs do really well when they tap into their strengths from former jobs. And so all that to say, Jenna was like, hey, it was a few months after Loom, you know, I met you at Loom. I know you have written copy before. I need somebody to help me with my launch copy. And I know you used to do that for Delta. Would you ever be interested in doing that for like a course launch? And I was like, yes, like if you trust me to go for, like, I love writing marketing copy. If you think I can write emails for your group, your tribe, I'll go for it. And so that's kind of what happened and how I got into working more from a launch standpoint and mapping out these email sequences for just a different type of client than I'd worked with in the past. And so I just really owe a lot to her because then she started spreading my name around to her friends that were launching things. And it was kind of after that, it was like dominoes. Like I just got known as the go-to girl in that space for that specific need. And that was really a point where things took off.
Yeah, no, that's amazing. So that, and incredible too, like February 2016, it's a year and a half, maybe a little, like just about a year and a half,
yeah,
which is tremendous in terms of like accomplishing all this. What's been the biggest change that you've gone through since you first launched to now?
Oh my gosh, so much. So I think it's like something that you hear a lot, but it looks different in application. Like once you realize to just like niche down and like own something and find that gap, like I, whenever asked like what piece of advice would I give somebody, I really think there's just so much value, at least I found, in going for like one thing and like wanting to just like be a go-to for it and trying to find something in a space that's not being served. And to be honest, there were people, Christina Scalera is an entrepreneur who also lives in Atlanta. She's an attorney for creatives primarily. And, Christina was like, Ashlyn, you seem to love this launch thing. Like, why not just own that piece? And I remember like kind of going into it, kicking and screaming at first. I was like, no, like I really want to write all the things. Like, I love, like, thank you for your penny for your thoughts, but like, I'm good. But it's just funny how like the more I don't know, wised up about being a business owner, and the more I saw that there was such a need, that is a huge change. Like I never would have thought that it was the right decision to make, but it just kind of felt right. And even though I was like really terrified to do it. And so that's probably been the biggest change, like just stepping into that fully and calling myself that and rebranding to talk about that. And that's been the biggest change.
Wow. How have you grown? What's been the biggest, I don't know, not necessarily challenge, but like where have you grown the most?
From a personal standpoint. So kind of back to the story, like during that phase where I was, you know, like reading Make It Happen and just realizing like, okay, I can do what I love and make money. Like this sounds probably more healthy than this glamorous thing I'm trying to make work now. And I said to Wes one day, I was like, I just want to know what it feels like to rest and not, like, hustle's a good thing. It's a great tool, but it's not serving me 24/7. And I just need some rhythms and seasons. And so I said, like, what would it look like if I worked from a place of rest and not hustle, instead of like letting hustle be the driving force of everything in my life? Like, clearly I have some type A perfectionistic tendencies that I need to lock up and get under control. So I would say like learning what that looks like has been hard because like, just to be 100% frank, I still struggle with like if you let me, I would work 24/7 because it is so fun to me, especially like being a business owner. Like you get to be the one that like toggles the dials and like switches things up and tries things. And I'm just kind of an addict to it at times. It is so fun to me. So the biggest personal hurdle that I continue to find myself like on my knees figuring out and just like wading through is figuring out what it looks like to back off from it. And then go, it always makes you stronger. And we know this, like we know it innately, but like it just looks different in practice. And so yeah, learning how to be an entrepreneur who still kind of deals with some bouts of anxiety and stress and worries and fears and just those patterns that have put me in not the best health positions in the past, learning how to just approach that now and what that looks like.
Yeah. Talk to us then too about some of your, like, how did you prepare for your lead up and your launch of your company? What were some of the things? Because a lot of the listeners are either thinking about going off on their own or they've recently gone off. Like what did you do to help prepare your launch of your business?
That's a great question. So I think like all of the things I thought you were supposed to do, like, you know, save money for 6 months and like have 6 months worth of clients on retainer ready to go. Like all those things didn't happen. Like it just, and so I think like you can, there's other things that I think, like I would say personally, that money that we spent planning on this creative conference was a tremendous asset because it was there that not only did I get all of these other voices speaking into me and like seeing things that I was good. So like going to a conference at first was probably one of the most helpful ways that I launched. And that was, I think it was in April. So it was a month and a half into my business. And I'd had just enough time to like get my feet wet, see what I really loved. But then to have those women helping point out blind spots and just kind of forecast what could happen for me. So that was one prong of the conference that was really helpful. But I think the other was being around these women that were people ask me sometimes, like, how do you start landing these high level clients? And honestly, I really think you have to, just to be brash, I think sometimes you have to pay to get in front of them because these people, you know, they're not hopping on webinars and they're very busy when they're at such a high level. And so sometimes you just need to like get to the like jalapeno margaritas in front of them kind of situation where you can just look each other in the eye and like level and be real with one another. So I would say like that was one of the best ways that I went into my new launch of my business. I mean, I could tell you that I tried to like start posting on social media and like have a great website put together, but it was just, I like cringe thinking about what like my branding looked like then. But I think I had the other important things there as far as like messaging was, because that's what I'd done. Messaging was in play and ready to rock and roll and honestly hasn't really changed that much from the get-go. So I think spending more time on that than my visuals was another good thing to spend my time on.
What is one of the, not a mistake, but like a hurdle or a decision that you made that maybe you goofed up on, or like what happened that you walked away from learning a lot?
Yeah. Ooh, that's a good one. I think, so working in like working with wedding creatives, their client process is out of control. Amazing. And it's, you know, they're serving brides. So, and I'm specifically talking about like wedding planners and, florists and wedding photographers, especially ones that are really high end, but they have this, they call it an experience, like the client experience. And there's a lot of focus on it. And I think like learning how to serve my own clients that are buying copywriting products, like not like, and I've learned about it for calligraphy too, but specifically like no matter what the service is that you offer, giving that really elevated high level experience with like touch points, client magazines, like gifts, like making sure that it feels just as luxurious as like booking something else. I think, was kind of, I didn't do it at first. Like I look back at my client experience back in the day and like, I was operating from a corporate standpoint. You know, like it was corporate, here's your deliverables, cut and dry, bada boom, bada bang. But like switching into just serving this, you know, a different industry, realizing like, okay, I'm going to have to change some things because these people are used to something else. But then seeing how that really gave a lot of value and helps me command the prices that I knew were worth it from a copy standpoint, but wanted them to see it too. So yeah, I think that changed a lot. And I just I like, yeah, shudder kind of thinking about like how corporate-y I was at first, but yeah.
Yeah. How did you, I mean, you mentioned like the pricing and the value. What was it like? Have your prices changed from when you first started, and how did you really come full circle to say like, this is what the value I bring and I'm with it? Like, were you always confident in that, or was that like a growth opportunity as well?
Okay. So to retract my earlier thing, when I was telling you like what I still struggle with, to be honest, pricing is still, I don't know. I think like as humans, we don't always know like what is enough. And it's always that like, you know, the more, it's funny too, the more I make, the more it still doesn't feel like enough, because I still operate back in like the money mindset that I had when I was a little 11-year-old girl and like wanted to go to a ballet camp and was like trying to figure out how to make it work. So I think like those things that are so deep within you, still resonate. So I think as far as figuring out my pricing, I trusted the experts. I binged on free content from Kristen Kaplan, from Sheena Skidmore. Like if she was a creative woman teaching on pricing, I was listening to everything. So I think I absorbed a lot of that, really trying to figure out what was value-based pricing versus finding your worth. And so right out of the gate, when we first sat down and figured out how to chart this thing out, we knew I needed to at least just be able to replace my corporate income. And so that's how we based off my pricing. I looked after the fact, but I didn't necessarily go into other calligraphers' websites and other copywriters' websites and see what are they charging. Okay, I'll go $100 under or $100 above. And I know a lot of people do that. And just, I mean, there's conversations on that. To me, it wasn't the most healthy way to go about it. And I found a lot more value in, you know, like my friend Christina that I mentioned earlier, like Coke is a Coke is a Coke. And like when you want a Coke, like you'll buy off brand maybe, but like you really want that Coke experience. And so you're willing to pay whatever for a bottle of Coke. And so I think like focusing on just my differentiating factor and my brand and like what made me, what did I have that was different and what is my unique selling proposition. So I think diving into that was really helpful. But yeah, first we charted it out just to break even and be able to, you know, have me at home working financially. And then from there, now it's come on to a different level. But again, like that's something that trusting a lot of experts on for wisdom and how to steward this and how to help other women, like as they're contracting and team members on my team, walk into what it is that they want to do. But at first, yeah, binging on some of that good stuff from a lot of pricing experts who are financial planners and they know what they're doing.
Mm-hmm. So let's talk a little bit about actual copywriting, if that's okay with you.
Yeah.
What are some like common mistakes that you see people, or like for yourself, when you're working with a client that like you really look for, or what's going to make copy successful?
Okay. So there's a few things here. I think, the first thing that I think is really hard for people to think through, and we can so easily say it all the time, but it looks different when we look at our own businesses, is just being clear over clever or cute. Like don't, you know, people are always like, what do I want that first headline on my website to be? So it pops and it catches eyes and turns heads. And yeah, you want it to be, you know, you want it to pop off the page, but at the same time, like people don't buy things that they don't understand. People buy things when they're simple, when they get it. And so just, you always have to think about it. You know your tasks and your work at a level 10, like you are an expert in it. And people that are coming to work with you think at a level 1, 2, maybe a 3 on a good day. So you've really got to like simmer things down and boil them down to the essence when it comes to your copy and be super clear. So I would say that's one of the first things that I see a lot of times with creatives' websites is like, it's just a little bit out there, and we need to be like, just, we can get there, like we'll get there, you know, longer at the end of the page or through your client experience or your client magazine or any other onboarding materials that you have, your blog posts, your emails. But when we're first introducing them to your brand, we need your messaging to be crystal, crystal clear. So I think a big thing that I tell a lot of creatives to focus on just a lot of entrepreneurs in general is your, I call it your onlyness factor, but figuring out what your unique selling proposition is, like what makes your brand different from all of the rest. Because if you can't tell me why you do what you do differently from somebody else, then I don't know who is going to be able to tell me that. So digging deep down into that, lacing your story into it. I think like that can be one of the most important integral pieces of messaging that you can have in your business. And then upon that, you can layer things like copywriting formulas, which you can find all over my blog, all over the internet. Like those are a dime a dozen, but you layer those then on top of the copy, the messaging that you have in your business.
I love it because it's short and simple. And I've previously in the past struggled with the same thing that you talked about. Like you want to make it cute and branded, but at the end of the day, if people don't know what you mean, then it doesn't matter because they're either not going to click and they're not going to be bought. They're not going to buy because they're so good. They're just confused. And people don't, the attention span is like what? It's like less, a goldfish has more attention span than
humans now. They say 8 seconds on a website is how long you have to commit somebody to stay on or get off.
Dang. Oh my gosh. That is
ruthless,
like,
crowd, right?
Right? Yeah. No, that's what I was thinking. I was like, whoa. Okay. So from like your experience when you're in your business, talk to us like what's a day in the life of Ashlyn?
I was thinking the other day, I was like, I feel like somebody needs to like, and maybe I should write a blog about that because I think, and I'll be honest, I mean, I have a lot, like sometimes I'm like, my dad doesn't even know what I do. So it, as far as a day, I am a big adherent to day batching. And so each day looks different, but week to week, those days are the exact same. So I have marketing Mondays in my business. And this is really, I just kind of have a habit of gear shifting and not like goldfish attention span, just in day-to-day life. So by batching my days, I'm able to, if something comes in and it sounds like a great idea for marketing, great. I can work on it the next Monday that rolls around. And so just really having that hyper-focused approach to each day is helpful. So those are Mondays. Tuesdays are client work Tuesdays. Pretty much don't ever change out of my workout clothes on that day. No makeup, like ponytail work, the whole like, I'll start really early and work really late, but I get all the client work that I had to do that week done in one day. Wow. Wednesdays are product development days. And so that is when I work on shop items and webinar content or any partnership opportunities coming up. And then Thursdays, I just do calls. So I'm typically, I batch all my potential client calls, mentorship calls, current client calls, anything and everything goes on that day. Lunch meetings that I want to have. And then Fridays are systems and finance Fridays. And so that's when I kind of look at the books, run the numbers. If there was a new opportunity that looked great for software in the business, I work on a lot of team development stuff on those days. So that's been really helpful for me. So it changes day to day, but like I said, week in and week out, it's the same. When I'm working on client stuff, my teammates help me out with a lot of our brand messaging and website copy for our clients, and I handle all of the launch strategy stuff. So as far as my Tuesdays, that looks like a ton of sales page writing, lots of Facebook group stalking to find those little copy bits that, sometimes here's another little a copy tip, but the best pieces of copy aren't always in your head. They're in your target audience's head. So just doing a lot of data mining and research and how do they state their problem and what is it, you know, what do they think about it? What do they say about it? What do they do about it? What do they feel about it? Just gathering all of that research. I think I do more research for a project than I actually spend on the project itself sometimes. That's what usually Tuesdays look like. So much typing, so much writing.
Wow. Well, and that makes me so curious and too, like just thinking mm-hmm. about in that process that you're talking that you do on Tuesday, in the beginning, like going back to a pricing thing, since it is a service versus like just a service in terms of exchange for your time and that, like, did you find that you had to tweak what you were charging for your services because you realize like you were spending X amount, like what is
good. Yeah. So, that's such a good conversation. I think one of the early things that helped me was like I said, agency background, I was used to tracking time. Like, you know, like all your lawyer friends that you have track time, like a lot of different business capacities track time. So I think like that was one of the first things I did in my business. So it's seeing how long it took me on projects, and the more that I executed a certain package, and of course it took me a good 5, 6, 7 clients to develop a package, and then maybe another 5 to get it just right. Well, then I got pretty fast at it. And so my hourly, if you, you know, I knew my hourly rate and what I needed to make an hour, but it skews a bit because you do get faster. And I know that I'm a really fast writer when it comes to certain things. Same with calligraphy or whatever the work of your hands is, you usually get speedy at it, right? So having to kind of adjust for that was a challenge. But I think, yeah, like tracking, using apps, using a timesheet, using Harvest. There's so many good ways to track your time to figure that out. But yes, so the price on that package, because the price on the package needed to go up. I was getting better and better. I knew my market like the back of my hand. You know, I had all of these other, I knew how data was converting because my clients would tell me what different call to actions worked best, what page flows worked best. So it was getting all of this in my arsenal. And if the price stayed the same, that wasn't quite fair. The price should go up. The product got better. And so, yeah, having to adjust for that on my end as well.
Oh, I love it. Thank you for sharing that.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Oh, my goodness. Okay. A couple last questions before we wrap up.
Okay.
What is like the one change, if you could only give us one change that we can make to our business, whether it's copywriting or it's something that you've personally experienced, when it comes to our business, that would result in the biggest ROI, what would it be?
Okay. So this is like, I'm going to give some book recommendations along this, if that's okay.
100%.
Okay. I love reading. So there are two things that I do each and every day that once I started doing them, I think I felt a little bit, it's like as an entrepreneur or a creative business owner, your day kind of never ends, right? There's never like a punctuation mark on it. It's like, and we're done. And now we're going to start again the next day. And so it was just like in this like constant flow of not really knowing when, what things were. So I started doing two things. The first thing is from a book called Design Your Day, and it's by Claire Diaz-Ortiz. Great little, I swear it's like 80 pages. You can read it in a day. And it is incredibly helpful talking about like efficiency hacks and just designing your day to tap into your strengths. So in that book, Claire recommends present mornings, and the acronym present means pray, read, express, schedule, exercise, nourish, and track. And so every morning when I sit down in the office, I have present written at the top of my page. I just go, you know, one day of the month, I go in with a marker and write at the top of every page and I cross them off. But just making sure that I've gone into my days, having a little bit of quiet time done, reading, doing just a little bit of journaling, exercising if I can. And if I can't have already done it that day, you know, I'll plan a little walk in the afternoon or around lunchtime, making sure I've eaten something because I think I get so excited about work or whatever, that making sure that I'm fueled and my brain is ready to work, and then tracking and scheduling throughout the day. So knowing what I have on my plate that day, picking 3 things and just making sure I get those 3 things done. So that is the first thing that I do. That has helped so much. But the kicker is at the end of the day, kind of doing something similar. And this is from Todd Herman. He has a program called 90 Day Year, and it was really, really helpful for me. It was expensive and a great investment, but it helped me kind of zero in on a lot of things. And one of the biggest takeaways that I had from that was to me, it sounds very like scientific-y, but the end of day optimizer. I don't know. I just come up with a better name for like, but essentially what you're doing is tracking your wins for the day, your challenges for the day, and then rating yourself 1 through 10 on tribe, your fuel for the day, your movement for the day, your focus and your energy for the day. And so every single day, and I'll be honest, I mean, I do present every single morning, but like end of day check-ins, I usually do at least 3, maybe 4 days of the week. I don't always hit 5 out of 5.
Yeah. I'm with you. Like sometimes it's way easier to get that morning routine down. And then I'm like in bed and I might be reading and I'm like, I can't even like bring myself to pick up my 5-minute journal.
Exactly. Yeah. That kind of thing. You know exactly what I'm talking about. So But that has been a good way. Like the days I do do it, I leave the office, which of course is in our house. And I'm like, okay, like, you know, cause like sometimes that last thing that you do sets your tone for the night. And if you end on a bad note, like I'm in a bad mood the rest of the night, or if there was a challenge I had at 9 a.m., I don't remember it by the next day. So I think like taking a minute and like jotting those things down has been really helpful in setting my biggest intention for the next day, like the biggest thing that needs to be done, kind of the eat the frog. I think that's a Mark Twain quote, like eat the frog, the biggest thing you don't want to do, do it first. That has been the thing that like made me most productive. Working from home and working in workout clothes half the time and having my dogs on the couch asleep in the next room and just wanting to go lay down with them. But like those two little things each day have truly, truly helped change that.
Oh my goodness. I love like the one of the end of day optimizer, but really
we need a better term for that, but yeah.
Yeah. No kidding. End of day EDO. I don't know. Anyway.
I write EODO in my notes, but like it just, yeah. I need to come up with a present morning sounds so lovely. And then like end of day optimizer is the
last. And then I'm like, ooh, that sounds really rigid.
Yes. We'll change
that copy. Maybe he needs you to go in and redesign the copy.
A softer side of 90 day year, right?
Yeah. So two last questions for you. One is, if you could wave a magic wand, what will be the next thing that you outsource in your business?
Oh, I love this. I need a project manager. I need somebody to make sure that my clients are getting that really elevated experience so I can focus on like just dreaming and designing and moving the ball.
Okay. I say that I'm like, oh, I bet hopefully there's people listening and they're like, Ashlyn.
Yes, come run in. I've got to work.
Like, yes, please. And then the last question I have is if I gave you $100, how would you spend it?
Oh my gosh. I'm such a money hoarder. Sometimes I feel like, that is so good. Right now I'm in my office looking at, so we have two German Shepherds and one constantly jumps on one chair and it is nasty. If it's ever in pictures, like brand photography, I'm like, ooh. So if I got a free $100, I may replace that chair right now. So my coworker is not allowed on the new chair, but
that is hilarious. Yes. I love it. If you wouldn't mind, would you share where our listeners can find you?
Absolutely. You can find me at ashlynwrites.com. And I'm also on the gram and all other social media outlets as Ashlyn S. Carter. And on Facebook as @ Ashlyn Writes.
Awesome. Oh my goodness. Ashlyn, thank you so much. I appreciate you taking the time out of your schedule and for coming on the podcast.
Absolutely. Thanks so much, Amina. I appreciate it.
Thanks for tuning in to the She Did It Her Way podcast. Did you like this episode? Head on over to iTunes.com to leave us a rating and a review. We would love to hear from you. And don't forget to check out SheDidItHerWayPodcast.com, where you can subscribe to our email list so you can receive the inside scoop on our latest episode released each Monday. Now, do us a favor and go make it a great week.